One of the big traditions has been building your own stuff. In the old days, that was the only way to do it. You couldn't buy a transmitter. And then again, even in the not so old days, when I got started in the 50s, I could not afford to buy a transmitter. So what did I do? I went out and cannibalized an old television set and built a 6-meter transmitter out of an old TV set. Found a Heath kit. Remember Heath kit? I loved Heath kit. An old AR2 receiver and the cam I knew. Sold me an LNW converter. Now, there was a great piece of equipment. A 6-meter converter that had 2 tubes but no RF stage. And it was a free-running oscillator, so you never knew from day to day where your receiver you were going to tune it to find your station. But it was fun. It's very hard to start from scratch nowadays because of the technology. But kit building, that's Heath Kit started, and a couple of Allied Radio started. Those two names are gone. They're out of it. But there are so many other companies. Probably the guy who knows more about homebrewing and the tradition of building is my buddy from Lincoln, Nebraska. It's Joe Eisenberg, KZNEB.
Why kits? In the beginning days, that's all we had. You would get a box in the mail in the 1920s and 30s, and it was all just a bunch of parts. And what did you put it on? Where'd we get the term breadboard? That's what people used, a piece of wood that they had sanded and polished and everything. They bolted the components to a piece of wood. Was that affordable? You bet. We wouldn't have hams back then if we didn't have this type of kit. Is it a learning experience? You bet. When you're putting together something one piece at a time, you learn what each of those pieces does, because most of these kits nowadays have manuals that will tell you what each component does and why. My wife works at a place called Hobby Lobby. It's about the size of a Walmart, but nothing but crafts and stuff like that. It's just unbelievable. And these ladies will go in, and it can be a blizzard outside. The schools are closed, the highways are closed, and they're in there with their four-wheel drives to buy this stuff to go back home and sit there when it's nice and cold for a few days and snowy and make things. Well, we in Ham Radio have our own crafts, and this is what our craft is. Not too many people can etch a printed circuit board. Not too many people can make a transistor or an IC or design a circuit. So we have kits. These are all put together in a bag of parts and ready to go. We have the ability to modify and improve these things. I thought this was kind of a neat little kit. There's all sorts of modifications out there already on the internet to modify this thing. Repairability. I hate to say it, but this little radio on my belt, I don't think I'm even going to take it apart because I'm worried I'll never get it back together. But this little key here, I put it together. I can take it apart. I can fix this thing. If something goes wrong, I know what's in there. I can fix it. Satisfaction making QSOs on something you built yourself. A lot of low power stuff is CW because, of course, it's the most simple and most efficient mode. What's really neat is to put together something and actually make a two-way contact on a radio you made yourself. It could be a 1-watt QRP thing, or it can be a 100-watt Elecraft. But to me, the magic is taking a box of something that I spent a weekend or an evening, or in this case, 10 minutes putting together, and putting it on the air. How many of you have actually built a kit? Was a kit the first radio you put on the air? What kind of radios? Tours. Oh boy, do I have stories about tours. A Sixer, a Pixie. All right, the first kits, of course, were breadboard type. In the 1930s, as the tradition grew in our hobby, they added custom metal cases. Of course, with ham radio closed down during World War II, there was no development in our kits, but there certainly were developments in technology, which led to the post-war kit era. They were a lot more refined and a lot more complete, and this is when Heath Kit was founded. From the 1960s to the 1980s, I call that the Heath Kit era. There's a lot more thorough manuals, a lot better performance for the money, and tremendously low cost. It made amateur radio affordable for more people. In the early 1990s, Heath disappeared. I remember they had a booth in the Ball Arena, and you cannot believe it was almost fistfights to buy some of that stuff that was being sold for 80 and 90% off. Believe me, I took home such a big box of that stuff that I had to check a third bag through on the airplane, which they don't let you do anymore. In the late 90s to today, I call it the new breed of kits or new era kits. There's a lot of high quality CAD design, that's computer assisted design. And so what you have possible is kits of immense complexity, but yet simplicity in terms of parts. This is a memory keyer. back in the 70s, I tried to make a memory keyer kit, and it was on 3 circuit boards. This thing is on 1 little 8-pin chip. There's 1 resistor, 1 capacitor, a jumper wire, a little speaker module, 2 jacks, a button, and a battery holder and a battery. With the board, the parts count is 12. Early Heath kits, lunch boxes. A lot of people got their feet wet with the lunch boxes because they were very easy to put together. But how many people remember what happened to TV sets when you turned them on? It's a regenerative receiver, all right? Which means it's got a very powerful receive oscillator. And that caused more TVI than it did when it was keyed down. The receiver many times put out more spurs than the transmitter. And you've got the old Warrior and the Apache. These radios, as simple as they were very, very efficient and very cost-effective. The lunch boxes, I remember when I was first introduced to ham radio, guys had them in their houses and they sat there on 6 meters AM on 50.4, just talked all evening. Ico kits. You know, novices used to have crystals, so you had to plug a crystal in and hope somebody would tune by you, except with the Ico 720. All you had to do is wait a while, and you go down the band. And you look at the 723, it wasn't much better. That one went up the band, because actually it had a reverse on the mixer. Closer to my heart are kits that were made in Council Bluffs, Iowa, across the river from my hometown of Omaha, was World Radio Lab's Globe kits. Leo Meyerson, who was my personal Elmer and got me started in amateur radio, founded World Radio Labs. As you can take a look at the construction inside these things, it was not so bad. I mean, when you look at these little contacts and stuff, I would cringe to see somebody using the tools that they used to make those things. They used soldering guns back then to solder those wires onto those terminals and the tube sockets. Nowadays, anybody with a gun ought to be shot. But what you're looking at is simplicity still in amateur radio. And these kits sold for $80, $90. It made it very, very affordable. Night Kit Star Roamer. That's probably the most common one that people tell me was their first kit, was one of those as a general coverage receiver. Somebody mentioned E.F. Johnson. E.F. Johnson made a lot of kits. They made a lot of their radios available, as well as Hallicrafters made them available as kits. Now you have the new breed of kits. You got the Rock Mites. And you have the Elecraft KX1, which I consider probably the most premier handheld transceiver kit ever made for amateur radio. And I'm telling you, that is as high quality as they get. And you have the NorCal 40-meter CW transceiver. I'd say this is probably the best kit on the market right now. This is the K2-100. It's a 100-watt transceiver. And the receiver specs and the transmitter specs spec out better than your $2,000 and $3,000 transceivers. Keep the tradition alive. Let's Elmer some hams that have interest in building. Start a club building project. Can be something as simple as this that you can do during a meeting. Have a build-a-thon day with local experts because they can help assist you. They can bring in test equipment and things that you may not have available, like a scope. Teach soldering and building skills as part of your classes when you're giving license classes or even as a club program. I'm always available, too, to give programs at clubs and ham fests. And build something yourself. That's the best way to do it.